Addiction impacts one in four families in the United States, yet when parents, children, spouses, friends, grandparents, and significant others search for ways to help their struggling loved ones survive destructive substances and behaviors, traditional wisdom in the addiction treatment world often tells them that they can't. The choices are often extreme. They must force the loved one into rehab or detach until they reach rock bottom. In their new book, Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change, several doctors have gotten together to create a practical guide to draw a roadmap of how families can help. Carrie Wilkins is a co-author of the new book, Beyond Addiction, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much for having us. We're excited you want to talk about this book for a minute.
Well, it's very important work, and this is part of the Center for Motivation and Change, and you're in New York City, and yet you're doing a lot of work in our region. You're doing work in the Berkshires.
We are. We just opened an inpatient program in the Berkshires in New Marlborough, so we're excited about that, too. The book and the rehab weren't exactly supposed to happen at the same time, but they are, so we're going to try to survive both.
What brings you to the region in the sense of, is it need or is it the geography of the place?
It's, I'd say mostly the geography. There's definitely need up here for sure. There's, compared to the West Coast and to Florida, there's very few inpatient programs on the East Coast, believe it or not. So, I mean, there's a few very large, well-established ones, but there's not as many options on the East Coast as there are in other parts of the country. So there's definitely need. But the Berkshires, as you know, are such a fabulous, beautiful, healing place. And we've just been thrilled coming here because we've just discovered a huge wealth of resources in terms of wellness, people excited to be working with us. It's a great place to be.
So you and Dr. Jeffrey Foote are co-founders of the Center for Motivation and Change in New York. You have some 25 psychologists that have been helping patients with substance abuse issues for about a decade or so, and a private practice that was really one of the first in the country to use evidence-based therapies. What is that?
So evidence-based therapies, and luckily people are kind of finally signing on to this. We were always kind of fascinated that we were one of the first to say, hey, we're doing this and we're doing this exclusively. The addiction treatment world has been very slow to change. And so evidence-based treatments are treatments that have been studied. And in our case, the protocols that we use have been studied for more than 20 years, 15, 20 years. And they're the ones that when you do head-to-head comparisons, you know, so when they put them next to other treatment models and have introduced them into programs and then track changes in the clients within those programs, these protocols do better. They're more effective. They help people change. People respond to them better than other protocols. So, you know, it makes complete logical sense that that's what we would be doing. But again, the addiction treatment world has been slow to pick it up. And in the area of helping families, it's been even slower. The treatment program that we use at CMC is something called CRAFT, Community Reinforcement and Family Training. And it's also been around for, you know, 10, 15 years, been researched in a huge number of studies, actually, with a wide range of demographics, you know, so a wide range of socioeconomic, ethnic, substance use, different family constellations. And again, it comes out as one of the most effective ways for family members to help their loved one, and nobody knows about it. It's fascinating and disheartening, actually, which is one of the reasons why we wrote the book, because we just wanted people to realize that there really is an option, and it's a really effective one.
The book is written specifically for families and friends of people who have a substance use problem, right, which says a lot in that these are the people who ultimately often have to make the decisions.
Absolutely. No, and they're a huge underserved group. Just like you said when you introduced me at the beginning of the show, they really, families are told a very specific message, you know, that you can't really do anything until your loved one bottoms out, and they make the decision on their own to decide that they want to change. They're told to detach. They're told to disengage. The message of tough love is a particularly confusing message for people to take on. And it really goes against a family's instinct. They really want to help their loved one. They want to be effective. They want their loved one to be safe and thriving. You know, so to get the message, you need to actually back up in order to help your loved one. It's just problematic and confusing. And I think, and it's not about running around and rescuing your loved one and doing everything for them. And, I think that's what a lot of people hear when we say, hey, don't have to back up. They're like, oh, but I can't do this for them. And we agree with that. Yes, you can't change somebody, but you can change your environment. You can change your own behavior. You can change the way you communicate, all of which will have a very positive impact on your loved one. So you can do things that change the whole situation.
When it comes to the actual treatment, is it an either or? Or, I mean, is the other one in your mind just outdated, or is it something that it works for some people and not others?
One of the ways that this protocol talks about setting it, kind of distancing yourself and disengaging from the problem, it's actually reframed and it's called setting limits, because you really do have to have your limits. You can't just let destructive things happen in your home. You can't let yourself be taken advantage of. There's lots of bad things that happen when somebody's abusing substances. So, we're coaching family members on, okay, what are your limits? What's okay and not okay to have happen in your house? What's okay and what's not okay to have happen in your communications with your loved one? And when you've reached your limit, how are you going to express that? How are you going to set that limit and set it effectively? Because what happens a lot, I can't tell you how many parents I've met with, they're just on their last nerve and completely overwhelmed, and they say, okay, I'm just going to kick them out. I'm just going to kick them out, and I have to lock the doors, when they're talking about like a young adult in their house who may have a substance problem. And I always say, okay, on the surface, that makes a lot of sense, but you actually have to do it. Are you at the point where you can change the locks on your house, pack up your child's belongings, and move them out and say, you can't come home? Because a lot of people will make those threats and say those things, hoping that their loved one will respond. But when it comes right down to it, they can't make those tough decisions. So you may get to that point, but there's a lot of things that you can do before you get to that last kind of desperate point where you're like, I'm sorry, I love you, but you have to leave. There's a bazillion things that you can do before that point that parents and family members in general just don't know about because, again, they just haven't been exposed to this way of thinking.
This way of thinking, is this, in your mind, the way to think about it, or do the more, for want of a better term, the more traditional and established approaches, do they work for some people?
They, of course, work for some people. There's a lot of families out there that have been absolutely changed and transformed because they've, taken advantage of the support that they've received kind of in more, quote-unquote, traditional environments. So it's not... And that's our overall message, is that different things work for different people at different times. And the problem in addiction treatment is that both substance users and their families have received one message, and that's what's created problems. That one message is really effective for some people. It really saved, the whole AA traditional kind of 12-step model absolutely has saved lives, and it's a lovely community in many, many ways. The problem is it just doesn't work for everybody. And so, when you're approaching an entire, 23 million large group of people with one solution to their problem, it just doesn't make any sense. And so our model is like, look, it may really work for you and it may save your life, but if it doesn't work for you, let's look at other options. And there really are other options and there's other things you can do, and you should be exposed to the whole gamut. I think we've just done a huge disservice to clients. There's a lot of clients who walk around with unbelievable guilt and shame because they haven't been able to kind of embrace, the message that they've been given. Whether it's you need to go to AA meetings or you need to abstain for life or, whatever message they've gotten, when they can't take it on for whatever reason, they just feel horrible about themselves. They feel like they're failing, they're never going to get better, there's no way they can fix this problem. And again, that's just not true. There are other ways you can get better. There are other ways to deal with the problem. And there are other ways for families to deal with the problem. So we're just actually trying to widen we're not trying to say this is better than that. We're trying to say there are options. And everybody needs to know their options and alternatives.
We are talking to Dr. Carrie Wilkins, who is co-author of the new book, Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. Let's focus on two of the words in the subtitle, the first being science. The science that you talk about in the book has a lot to do with what we know about how people react to treatments. And I want you to talk about that. But I'm interested in, has the science changed greatly and has been confirmed? And have we learned a lot over the years about addiction itself, of what makes us become addicted?
Yeah, that's what's so exciting about the field right now. And one of the reasons we wrote the book the way we did, because it's really a kind of soup to nuts book for families, where we want to spend the first part really educating them about, so they can be educated consumers about what has science taught us. You know, what do we know now that really can help you get around the myths that are out there, kind of debunk some of the assumptions you might be making about your loved one, so that you can actually understand the problem better. Because if you understand the problem, you're going to be better equipped to deal with it. And science has given us an enormous amount. And I think what, you know, scientists and doctors are learning about the human brain, how it responds to substances, you know, how motivational states can be affected, how behavior change happens. You know, I mean, we understand a lot better now how behavior change happens and how long it actually takes, and that there's no quick fix. And when you kind of learn a habit, you know, in this case, substance use, it takes a long time to it's not even unlearning it, but it takes a long time to learn replacement habits. You know, you've got to take that out, and then you've got to learn something else. And that, again, it takes a long time and a lot of trial and error. So when there's setbacks or relapses or slips, to really appreciate that that is actually part of getting better, you know, and it's how you respond to those slips, and it's how you respond to those setbacks and what you learn from them that, you know, we understand a lot better. So, and then there's a ton of information now and awareness that we have about different medications that are helpful to people, you know, that 10 years ago nobody knew about, and even 5 years ago weren't available. So there's medications because we understand the brain better. So, yeah, science has given us a lot. The thing that people don't always realize is that the second part of our title, which is kindness, science and research studies have shown us that kindness is actually the best approach to this problem, because, you know, the substance world has been very kind of steeped in confrontation and challenging, and you got to really be aggressive with substance users because they've got to learn, you got to crack through that denial. Research studies have shown time and again that confrontational treatment tactics actually set people back. And in a couple of studies, they've been found to predict relapse. So approaching people with kindness and collaboration and really trying to understand where they're coming from, understand why they're doing what they're doing, and help them understand it is way more effective in kind of moving the change process along.
I want to get into kindness and talk about this, because I find that to be the most fascinating part of your work. I do want to go back, though. Something that a physician told me years ago, that a physician and a former addict, who said, we are almost hardwired to have addictive behavior. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that?
Well, I think some people absolutely feel that way, and that's, you know, the way, if you kind of look at their behavior, that's what it looks like on the surface. It's actually such a complicated issue, and I often talk to people about, like, the perfect storm. It's like, okay, so some of this is genetic. You know, maybe you've got some sort of predisposition in terms of, like, you're just more tolerant to alcohol. You can, you know, because your father, your uncle, and your grandfather and your family tree has a high tolerance for alcohol, you're kind of set up to be able to drink more. That's not a good thing. You know, if you're somebody who needs to drink 5 beers before you have an effect, and the guy next to you has 2 beers and feels woozy, you're going to be the 5 beer person is going to be more at risk for a substance use problem, because they don't even feel alcohol in the same way. So that's genetic. You know, that's just the way your brain is wired.
And what about cultural and societal?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, and then you've got kind of what you grew up with, you know, so your nature part of it, your nurture part of it. So you've got the brain part, which is the nature part, and then you've got the environment that you grew up in, cultural, familial, you know, just what you learned within your family. So that's a huge piece of it. And then you've just got all the random life stuff that we're hit with that, you know, maybe you actually had a depressive episode and started drinking in response to a depressive episode. Maybe you had a trauma. You know, maybe you're a war veteran who went to war and is having horrible PTSD symptoms and started to use substance to try to treat your PTSD symptoms. You know, I mean, it can show up in people that you wouldn't have otherwise predicted because they had some life thing that happened that they started to use substances for. So I think it boxes people in to say, oh, we're just any addict is wired to be this way. It just whitewashes the complexity of this. And what we really want people to appreciate is this is a really complex problem. It can't be broken down into little quick sound bites. You know, you can't like just gloss over everything and say all addicts are the same, because that's really not true. And I think it really disempowers a lot of people from thinking creatively about how they can address the problem. I mean, I say to people all the time, substance users end up with the problem for so, so many different reasons, and they get out of having the problem in a variety of ways, too. So why are we kind of trying to constantly make this a narrow conversation? It doesn't need to be.
How do patients, in your experience, react to kindness? And how, as caregivers, and specialists and family and friends, how is that kindness sustained?
Sometimes it takes a lot of work, because it is actually hard work. And we should talk about that in a minute, because a big portion of the book is, in fact, probably about a third of the book is about self-care strategies for the family member trying to do this. Because, you know, if you're burned out, if you're stressed out, if you're just on your last nerve, you cannot be effective at this, because you're going to be losing your cool all the time. You're going to be breaking down into tears all the time, and that doesn't help you or your loved one. So we spend a lot of time trying to help family members kind of build up their own resources and build up their own foundation and stability, because that's a huge piece of it. You know, as treatment providers, we do the same thing. But I was just having a conversation the other day with somebody. We don't experience a lot of burnout, you know, because we approach it in this different way. We're not confronting people. We're not tangling with people. We're not pressuring people. So as treatment providers, I love my job. I mean, I see people change all day, every day. You know, it's so reinforcing as a treatment provider to see people change their lives and see the families around them change. So it's actually enjoyable and fun. I don't feel burned out or angry all the time, you know, and often people say that to me. I'll say, you know, people say, what do you do? And I'll say, you know, treat substance problems. And you 9 times out of 10 get the response of like, oh God, that must be so hard. Mm. And it's actually not. It's amazing. It's so rewarding and powerful. And, you know, actually, we're all just excited about our work all the time.
But you started off by saying that it is hard work. Is that for the patient? Is that for those providing the treatment, for the family, or where does that come in?
It's hard work in terms of it's complex. You know, it's a complex problem that you're dealing with. So you actually have to really think strategically. I think for family members who try this approach, you know, they have to change their habits as well. You know, so while they want to help their loved one change their substance use habits, they often have to start that whole process by changing their habits. You know, so if they're a family member who's been kind of used to yelling at their loved one every single time they're disappointed, or, you know, they come home intoxicated, if their habit is to, I'm going to yell at you and tell you what a loser you are for being drunk again, that may be a hard habit to break. You're going to have to bite your tongue. You're going to have to figure out what else you're going to say. You're going to have to figure out a different moment to respond when you're more in control. What our family members find pretty quickly is that they're more effective when they take these strategies on and they start to do this stuff. They'll actually have these real moments where they're like, wow, I actually had great conversation with my loved one. I changed how I was talking about the problem, and they sat down and talked to me. I didn't get the same old defensiveness. I didn't get the same old, you know, telling me I'm the problem message. You know, so they start to see change, and they start to see they get a different response, and then that's reinforcing, and they want to do more of it. So it's hard because, it's habit change, and habit change for any human is difficult because we just get on autopilot. So to slow down and really become aware of, like, okay, what are my patterns? Here's my plan. This is what I'm going to try to do differently. And then to actually put it into play, it just takes a lot of cognitive, emotional wherewithal.
So to the other part of the question, how do you define kindness, and how is it received or should be received by the person receiving the treatment?
So kindness, and it's funny, people have a funny response to it sometimes because, again, I think they just mean, I think they think it means, oh, you just have to be nice all the time, right? So if you're being kind, you have to be nice all the time. Kindness is, in the way that we talk about it, is often in tone, it's often in word choice, it's in presentation. But, you know, and if people read through the book, you'll see there's a lot of limit setting, you know, so how do you set limits, but how do you do it in a way that your loved one can hear? You know, so if your loved one comes home intoxicated and you're like, your impulse again is to fight, right? To fight and say, I can't believe you're drunk again.
Mm.
Instead, they walk in the door and you say, you know what? I cooked dinner for you because I was really looking forward to having dinner with you, but you're intoxicated right now, so I don't want to have dinner with you. I'm putting the food away. You can eat dinner alone, and I'm going to go read a magazine by myself. So that's an example of, I'm disengaging, actually. I'm not going to be with you when you're intoxicated because I don't want to be with you when you're intoxicated. But what they're saying is actually very clear. You know, you're giving the person very direct feedback about what's wrong. You're intoxicated. You're telling them that you don't want to be around it, and you're walking away from the problem. And then we coach them, okay, the next morning when your loved one's sober, is there something you can say when they're in a better frame of mind that, again, can be effective in saying, hey, we have to work on this because I really want to have dinner with you and I miss your company, but I can't do it when you're intoxicated, you know? So, again, the tone shifts, and what people see really quickly is a dramatic decrease in defensiveness, and that is better for everybody. The substance user is less defensive and less kind of in, I've got to justify my substance use, you know? The loved one is talking, you know, they're actually having conversations with their loved one, which again is really reinforcing.
Does it increase compassion?
Yeah, enormously, which is another goal of the book. I mean, that's so, you know, when we start the book with what science has taught us, there's a chapter on what is motivation, what do we understand about motivation, what is behavior change, what really goes into making a change, a dramatic change in behavior, because we really want people to have more compassion about what's going on with their loved one, you know, because it's frustrating. It's frustrating and oftentimes really scary to watch somebody with a substance use disorder kind of careen around in their lives and put themselves at risk and put themselves at financial risk and the family at financial risk. There's lots of understandable reactions that family members have. They're frightened and they're angry, and that's all understandable. And at the same time, they really want to help. You know, so these strategies are to help them get out of the angry, constantly upset mode and into the effective, I'm going to actually try to change things mode, which is really where they want to be. And they want to stay attached to their loved one. I mean, they really do. I mean, most mothers really want to stay attached to their children. Most spouses really want to stay attached to their, they don't want their marriage to end because of a substance problem. You know, so if you can teach them skills that they can really take on and practice themselves, and even that, the art of practicing changing your own behavior increases compassion. So the whole book and the whole strategy is to increase awareness, increase compassion, and, you know, you just see all the anger and distress go down a notch, which is super helpful.
Dr. Kerry Wilkins is co-founder of the Center for Motivation and Change. She is co-author of the new book, Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. The book is published by Scribner. Kerry, thank you very much for sharing with us and for the great work you're doing. I appreciate you sharing your expertise with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Again, the title of the book is Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. It is published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.